And everybody up there talks like a Vermonter, and I don't understand that at all. They're nice.
Oh dear.
And her husband is an accountant, and is currently working for, and I don't know the name of the company, and I should, but their major product is radio, one of their major products is radio shows dealing with health services for use in foreign radio. The idea is they can't get the general public in, I'll make up a place in Nigeria, interested in the problem of AIDS, but they're interested in a good radio drama, melodrama. And so they do a dramatic show that teaches all the elements of health and well-being, nutrition, protection from the disease, these things, right? That's what it is. Sounds like an interesting area. It's a wonder I didn't get into something like that, but I didn't. I did do talking books for a while, directed for them, and that was fun. Before they became so generally popular, we have some around here. I listen to them all the time as I drive around. I commend them to you. They make the miles go much faster, it seems. But in those days, they were pretty exclusively used by the blind, but had some very fine actors. Last night, I saw a little piece of a 1950s, I guess 40s, 50s movie with Glenn Ford and Alexander Scorby. Alex was the villain in the piece, and Alex and I got to be good friends. He did a lot of recordings there. He was one of our recorders. We got a wedding present from Jose Ferrer, who was another of the better-known actors that we worked with. One of my jobs was, pretty low on the totem pole of management out of this site, but I would consult with people about what books would be recorded and what actors, actresses would be the readers and things like that. And one of the stories that I enjoy, one day my boss said, tomorrow, better come in a little early tomorrow because we're going to have a tea party here at 2 o'clock. We're going to have a tea party. Helen Keller is coming, and I know you'd like to meet her. I said, I'm going to have tea with Helen Keller? Yeah. So the next morning I got up and spent 30 minutes trying to decide which necktie went best with my shirt. And I thought, I probably don't need to worry. Miss Keller by that time was a senior person. The lady with her was not her famous aide, but a younger woman. The way she listened to me was she put her hand over my face like that so that she could feel the vibrations from the bones and the movement of the lips. All right. Well, I'm sorry, this way, because the two fingers were on the larynx and here. So the vibration and the lip movement gave her enough signal to know what I was saying. I don't know if you've ever had tea and cookies with anyone when you were very embarrassed. But try balancing your teacup and your cookie and carrying on a polite conversation with one of America's idols, at least. Why don't you try to talk to them? I don't think I was at my best. But charming, of course. Another one of that same era. One day as you were setting this up, I said, you're doing it reminded me of a couple of things. One day, the fellow that was in charge of the thing, Arthur said, Fred, I want you to go downtown and do a remote this afternoon. I said, remote? He said, yeah. I said, okay, sure. He says, you're going to engineer it. I said, well, all right, whatever you want. I didn't ordinarily do much engineering, But the same kind of Ampex machine that I was talking about before, the portable recording machine. So I went down to the address that you told me of, the Waldorf, I think. I think it was the Waldorf. And it was a remote with former President Harry Truman. He was going to read the foreword to one of our books. And so I got to help him, as you know, help him speak his piece. And I said to her, hey, how come you sent me? He said, because I knew you liked Harry Truman and I thought you'd enjoy meeting him. I thought that was very nice of you. It was a nice place to work, nice people. It was during the blacklist time of the HUAC. We had to be careful what performers we would hire. One of the readers that I got to know pretty well, name is Bob Bradley. I don't think anybody would mind me telling you that. Because every time I saw him, he had a new union card with a new fake name. Well, not fake. They were his. They were the names on the card, right? And I would see him, and I'd say, well, what's your name now? And he'd tell me. And so if we were hiring, I'd say, well, how about a limited, whatever it was. And for years, he worked radio. And really, really got to be very popular on television in the 50s and motion pictures. A lot of good feature roles. He was a character actor. Bucks County, Pennsylvania. His home, I remember, was talking a lot about that. He liked it. He was a nice guy, but he had been a member of the Communist Party. And so he was one of the people that they spotted and blacklisted. But that was only by name, but only the rest of us knew what he looked like. We'd hire him by face instead of by name. It was a bad, bad thing. Really bad. I'm listening to a novel now that's set in that era and involves the blacklist and stuff. Just incredible. Incredible idea. I was teaching at a college back through that era. Mm-hmm. And at one point the dean asked me to come into class. I remember the dean, he was a tall, very black haired gentleman, and his former style. I had one of those kinds of accents that used to remind us all. I graduated too late in 1939. One day he called me in to talk to him, and he said, a friend, are you teaching a class in modern theater? I said, yeah. He said, do you think it's absolutely essential to include George Bernard Shaw in that class? And I said, well, for crying out loud, he's one of the giants of English dramatic literature, you know, what would you do? He said, you know he's a socialist. Well, I know he's a socialist. That's not the same as being a communist. I said, that gives me an opportunity to talk about the differences in class and things. Besides, most of those plays don't have much to do with it. Well, they really do. Don't have much to do with that. So I managed to stay teaching there. But one of my colleagues, adult daughter, married daughter, participated in one of the anti-book burning episodes in the city. They were taking books out of the public library that were socialistic leftists in their ranks. And she joined the others in protesting. Her father was seriously threatened with his job. And he said, well, what in the world? I didn't do anything. Yes, but what kind of family could she have been raised in to have had those kinds of attitudes? It's tacky. But that was the way a lot of people were thinking in the 50s. Yeah. Terrible time. So afraid. And I guess like everything else, you're more afraid of things you don't know than, I don't know, I'm pretty much afraid of some of the things I do know, so I don't know if that's true or not. But fear does funny things to us. A thing on television, I think it was this morning or last night, again, talking about the new searches going on in airports and the people protesting to having their liberty infringed upon because of the fear of terrorism. Which is worse? What do you do? How do you balance between the two problems? But as one fellow used to, television comedian used to say, it's not my job. Oh, my, I don't have to worry a whore. But I do anyway. Anything else we want to do?
Well,
we must have used up most of your time and all of your goodwill.
We're getting there, but your wife was telling me earlier about when you got to meet her father, so I was wondering what your side of that story was.
Oh, all right,
yeah,
sure.
The way you and Dad got along
sure.
So well, instantly,
yeah,
really.
Absolutely.
It's so funny.
Well, I don't know what she told you about her father, but he was a PhD professor at Lowell at the time I met him, Lowell Institute in Massachusetts. Had been an officer in the First World War, had been recalled into the Second World War, and had command positions. Came out of the service as a full colonel, bird colonel, as we call them. Old Williams family of New England, the Williamstown, Williams College, Williams, right? That's the family. So about as old school as you can imagine. Her mom, really a Mayflower descendant, all right? So, and this itinerant acrobat. makes a likely couple, right? Well, Dr. Williams was... wouldn't say short. Was not a very tall man. I'd say, I don't know, 5'6", 8", somewhere in there, middle fives. And of course, by the time I knew him, was 50, 60 years old. And just a terrific guy. He was just swell. One of the things that made that second decision such a good decision. But then I got a pretty swell person to be with all the time. I got into a swell family. Her dad, her mom, her brother. They're just terrific. Very, very pleased to get to be a part of that. And Dr. Williams was certainly part of it. He and I hit it off just right from the beginning, all sorts of things. And we'd wander when I was up. Well, I was going to say yes. We'd get over in a corner and giggle and talk.
and swear.
Yes, he was very proper and polite. Right? And all those years in the military, he had learned a different vocabulary. And all those years in show business, I certainly had experienced the same one. But both of us were a little cautious, in fact. And it struck me, and I reported it to my wife, and she's giggled about it ever since. It was true. We'd be in conversation, and we'd walk out of the house, and as soon as the screen door had slammed behind us, the vocabulary would change. And, ooh, all those expletives got slipped in there somehow. Of course, I was a wholehearted participant, you understand. I mean, neither of us shy about it, but that was boy talk. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it really, really was. It was a part of it. But all of it was part of it, gestalt experience. And he and my dad got along very, very well. Him with his PhD, my dad in doubt whether he went to the third grade or finished the third grade, right? Certainly self-taught, but not educated. And they just got along fine. But again, in their case, both the same generation, both basically, I think, nice people. I think that helps. Yeah, it was good stuff. And their home in Groton was another, I don't know when it was built, but I think it was rebuilt around the time of... George Washington's childhood. I think it was one of the houses that was burned in the Indian oppressions of the 1710 here, whatever. But it was rebuilt, so it wasn't an old house. The old house was gone, but this was the new one that they lived in. And lovely house, lovely house. Right off the, I guess that's the main street, maybe it isn't, I'm not sure. Main Street and Groton kind of forks, and I don't know whether it's still the Main Street one goes that way or it goes this way, but they lived on this street. Up away, and very nice.
All
right. Right behind their house was a little stream, and the little stream is named James His Brook.
Well,
the apostrophe, when you write it, the apostrophe stands for the his or hers. That's the way the language was spoken. Fred His Book, James His Brook.
Okay.
But free lesson, no tuition is needed. The comma stands for a word or words that is left out of a sentence. When you make an apostrophe of it, put it above the superscript, put it above the writing, it stands for a letter that has been left out. If you put it between words, it stands for the part of the word, the letters of the word, that are left out. Don't. Right?
Mm-hmm.
James. You don't say James's. What do you do? To make it the possessive.
Mm-hmm.
No tuition for that.
Thanks. All right, well, I guess we'll wrap up.
Right.
So thank you very much for your time.
A lot of energy.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
Oh, it'll be a pleasure.
Oh,
you give it a dog growls. Anyway.
Yes, you get a few growls.
Oh, I'm not that talented at editing.
Oh, I did my first commercial with the digital recording not long ago. And then woman was directing, she said, no, just if you make a mistake, just stop, pause a beat, and then do it over again, do the word over again. I said, well, okay, because she could edit out portions of syllables, portions of the vowel sound, shorten the ah to ah, and again. Took me years to learn to do that physically.
Oh, I know.
When I used to edit the tapes, I used to do it with scissors and tape, you know, and have to glue it back together.
That's the truth.
Literally,
I know.
Yes.
I know. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were about to quit, and here I got
well,
into another silly story.
I will just pause. Thank you for
okay.
your time.
Well,
and it,